Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of a discussion about foundational nutrition, and nothing could be more foundational in the field of nutrition than proper fat intake, healthy fats. It sounds like an oxymoron, but fat is back in after a long period of being maligned and stigmatized. Healthy fat is not an oxymoron. And we're talking about healthy fats from omega-3 sources and omega-6 sources. Helping us with an understanding of foundational nutrition is Geralyn Swindle. She is a Nordic Naturals educator with over 20 years' experience in the natural health industry. And let's pick up on our conversation from part one, shall we, Geralyn?
Sure.
We were talking about the potential problems that can arise from deficiencies of omega-3 fatty acids. So, you know, the American diet weighted heavily towards omega-6. People, you know, sometimes don't like fish, or the fish that they get is Mrs. Paul's, you know, fish fillets that are not particularly,
Yes.
I mean, they're fish-like substances, but highly processed,
yes.
And the oils are damaged, and there's very little residual omega-3. So what happens when people don't get enough omega-3? What are some of the disease states associated with that?
Well, you know, it can go really deep, because when you have cells that aren't functioning properly, you know, almost anything can come out of that. But a lot of the research that's out there, there's a lot of information, of course, about the cardiovascular system, particularly blood lipid levels, maintaining healthy blood lipid levels. We know that it's incredibly important to the brain. As a matter of fact, DHA, one of the components of omega-3 fatty acids, is actually part of the structure of the brain. It's also part of the structure of the eyes. So we know that it's crucial to even be able to create some of these organs in the body, not to mention their function as well. You know, we in the education department, we have done education on how it supports the immune system. You know, I've got one coming up about how it supports skin. And so there is just an entire host of things throughout the body that people are dealing with in this country on a daily basis, that omega-3s will actually support the healthy function of all of those.
You know, isn't it true, and veterinarians know this, is that when animals get the mange, you know, the expression of mangy dog, you know, with like just sort of dandruffy skin and, you know, patchy hair loss, that they know that the answer is not to, you know, just give them steroid creams or medications. The answer is to give them an additive to their diets, which is essentially, you know, cod liver oil derivative, which is omega-3 fatty acids. Because they recognize that it's sort of a lack of skin lubrication and inflammation that develops when you don't have omega-3. So a lot of people complain of dry skin, and they apply these expensive creams and emollients to their skin, especially in winter.
Absolutely.
And I tell them, get a lube job, but get it from within. You know, take something orally. Don't smear all this stuff on your skin, because it's, you know, just putting a Band-Aid on your surface.
It really is true. And one of my favorite little phrases that I use a lot is oiling the machine so that it functions properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much what it does.
And that's a good analogy, because clearly there's a benefit to the joints of omega-3 fatty acids. Like, you know, there's so many studies that support omega-3s for joint health, even some studies that suggest that back pain may be ameliorated by use of fish oil. I mean, you're not going to get instantaneous relief by taking two fish oil capsules, but over time, over 6 months of consistent fish oil use, some studies have shown that some patients who are earmarked for back surgery may cheat the surgeon's knife by taking omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was just told a story yesterday. I was at a trade show yesterday, a one-day show, and someone was telling me they actually run a store, and they said they couldn't figure out why they kept running out of our fish oil. And what he found out eventually is that there was a sports team, and the coach, every time one of their players would have any type of surgery, he would come in and just wipe out the shelf. to make sure that his players were using it. So definitely, I mean, it makes a tremendous difference. I use it personally myself for many of those same reasons, and as do a lot of people that I know. So yeah, there is more and more research. Some of the research being done now is on things like mood. There's been some research that they're doing about traumatic brain injury and mm-hmm. all kinds of things that they're looking at now.
Yeah, we've done some specials on TBI with, let's say, Dr. Lewis is his name, who is has a website which talks about TBI protocol, which really the essential ingredient behind the TBI protocol is high-dose fish oil supplementation. And it's remarkable what can be done. And this would have such important implications for sports teams, for the military, you know, with the recent advent of that movie talking about the incidence of traumatic encephalopathy in football players. I mean, this should be standard policy for high school, college, and professional teams.
I agree. I agree completely. You know, and I forgive me, I will not be able to quote the exact study at the moment.
I think Michael Lewis is the guy, yeah.
Yes, yeah. But I read, as I was reading studies at some point about traumatic brain injury, there was one paper that was written that they had looked at fatty acid levels in the cells in people that had had a traumatic brain injury. And what they found was that people that had sufficient amounts of EPA and DHA in the cells at the time that the injury happened actually showed a significantly different path of healing than those that had insufficient amounts in the cell. So it was very eye-opening for me to look at that and think, wow, so essentially what they're saying is that don't wait until there's an issue. And again, this is why foundational health. Don't wait until there's an issue. Do something for mm-hmm. when issues come up. Yeah.
Indeed. I mean, and that's sort of standing conventional medicine on its head because, you know, we tend to be, putting out fires in doctors' offices. But
exactly.
Really, I mean, today I saw a marvelous patient. She said, I'm perfectly fine, but I just want to, you know, it's time for my physical. I want an assessment from you, but I just don't want to be told that everything's fine. I want to be told, give me some guidance as to proper supplementation. I'm 53. I do CrossFit. I'm very active. I want to know how to maintain a very high level of fitness and performance ability so that I can set the stage
beautiful.
For my 60s and 70s. She's just recently retired from a job, and she wants to really optimize her health. So, you know, that's
– enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the type of patient we're looking for. Okay, so let's move on to some omega-3 controversies. There's a whole argument about what form of fish oil is the best. Some of this has to, there's a big push from the makers of krill oil, for example. They say that krill oil is more bioavailable. It's got some additional advantages. It has a little bit of astaxanthin in it, superior. That's one of the controversies. Another controversy is, should it be the ester form? Many of the pharmaceutical fish oils that the cardiologist will give you, would it be ester fish oil? But most of the health food brands are triglycerides. So, can we tackle some of those controversies?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I'll start with the krill. I will spare you my soapbox about the sustainability of krill, and we'll speak about the form. But, you know, krill is in a phospholipid form. It is a phospholipid form of EPA and mm-hmm. DHA, and there is a small cross-section of people that may tolerate a phospholipid better. Some people who don't properly digest fats, and some pregnant women who aren't tolerating a high-quality fish oil. Not the one who's getting the 180 count 1899 jobby, but actually a high quality fish oil. Some of those people will do better on a phospholipid form. The problem is that you're getting excessively low amounts of EPA and DHA. Mm-hmm. In a krill oil, you're going to get on average between 85 and 185 milligrams combined.
They're small pills, so they say, it's easier to swallow, and that's a lot of people think it's. That's an advantage, but you're getting less in effect.
Yeah, it is. You're getting a lot less. And, mm-hmm. and the issue is that if you need a phospholipid, we make a sustainable phospholipid form that's not from krill. It's from herring roe. However, if I'm going to spend $45 on a fish oil, and I know what I'm deficient in is EPA and DHA. We don't get deficient in phospholipids. The average human being is not going to get deficient in phospholipids.
Yeah.
I would rather spend my money getting 1,000 milligrams of EPA and DHA if I can tolerate it. And there's such a small cross-section of people that don't, that there is a place for it, but it's not near the place that has been posed at all. And if you need astaxanthin, there's all sorts of ways to get it.
You can get you can get it separately. The claim is that phospholipids somehow magically are better incorporated in the cells, that it gives the EPA and DHA a backbone, if you can visualize that, that they're attached to, and that somehow that's what the way it is in your cell membranes. So the phospholipids is somehow more natural or more bioavailable. It occurs to me that when you digest these pills, that you're likely to break away the EPA and DHA from the phospholipid backbone. So that, you know, kind of goes against that argument, doesn't it?
You know, it does. And for me, because of course, Nordic Naturals, we really always kind of lean back against the research. And I have yet to see research that supports the claim that it is utilized better. Or digested better or absorbed better or anything to that degree. Now, if I were to see a study like that, then we could have a conversation about maybe it making a bigger difference. But I have seen, in fact, I have seen studies to the contrary.
I've looked at the studies very carefully, and I've seen some studies that support the superiority of krill oil. But when you look at the studies, they sort of stack the deck because they either use a fish oil product that's very low potency, they manipulate the data. Some of the studies are partially sponsored by krill oil manufacturers, which, you know,
okay,
I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're false, but it, you know, it suggests that there is, a publication bias in terms of, hiding adverse results and accentuating positive results. So I'm from Missouri on krill oil myself.
Yes, I am as well. And, you know, just as far as a study that is sponsored directly by, you know, that you can run into that at times. You definitely can. And then what you run into is what form of fish oil were they using? Because not all fish oil is created equal. So you can find a very low quality, high oxidized, low potency fish oil. And if that is what's going up against krill, then, you know, of course, you're going to see a difference in that.
Yeah. All right, so that's enough on that subject. On the triglyceride versus ester form, the pharmaceutical companies seem to prefer the ester form, and what that affords them an advantage, because ester form, you can concentrate very high levels of EPA and DHA in a capsule. So right now, go to your cardiologist. Yeah. Cardiologist says, don't bother going to the health food store. I can prescribe this for you. And, you know, this is interesting because if you look at the actual price of these products, it's astronomical. It's like sometimes $300 a bottle, but because of insurance, your copay is going to be like $45, which is kind of what you'd spend on a very high quality fish oil. So it's kind of evens out. I mean, it's prescription. You still like, you don't pay the whole thing often, but, you know, you think, okay, this is prescribed by my doctor. I'm going to go with the medical version of fish oil. What's the difference?
Well, you know, the ethyl ester is something, it's a form of the fat in the fish oil that is created by the concentration process. The oil that we get directly from the fish is 100% in triglyceride form. As a matter of fact, 98% of the fat that comes to us through our diet, through our food, is in triglyceride form. It is the form of fat that nature gives us. It is also the form of fat in our bodies because that's what we're getting from nature. So ethyl ester is created during that concentration process, and it's necessary in order to concentrate the oil, to get these higher amounts of EPA and DHA. But only a handful of companies are turning it back into triglyceride form. It's an expensive process. And like you said, when you have to make room for that glycerol backbone, that's going to take up space in the soft gel, so you can't get it quite as high as you can if you're using an ethyl ester. But the problem is that in order to utilize any fat, the body has to turn it back into that triglyceride form. Now, luckily, it can do that. It's able to do it, but that takes a little longer. You don't have all the pieces right there with the fat the way you do if you ingest it in triglyceride form. So it's essentially this man-made form of fat that comes yep. out of that concentration process. And triglyceride is the form in our food, and it's the form that the oil originated.
Are there any studies of bioavailability when taking triglyceride versus ester omega-3s?
You know, there's a couple of different pieces of information that you can get from some of these different studies. One of them is that lipase, which is the enzyme that really is kind of primary in helping us to digest our fats, it has an affinity for that glycerol backbone on a triglyceride versus that alcohol cap on an ethyl ester. So right from the very beginning, the enzymes that help us to digest it prefer that triglyceride form. They have a preference for it.
Okay, that's interesting.
And then from there, there are some that show a difference in the utilization in the body. A lot of it's talked about absorption, but it's really that utilization in the body that makes the difference. And I have seen one study, I think the number was 22 or 26% different from our ultimate omega versus an ethyl ester form of fish oil.
Okay. That's an interesting explanation. Let's talk about rancidity, because I did a preview of this subject because recently there was a study on rats, admittedly, but it showed pretty disastrous results when rancid fish oil was fed to pregnant rats. Now, we know that fish oil is very desirable to take when you're pregnant. So many benefits to the both the mother and the child.
Yes.
And even for sustaining the pregnancy, you can actually reduce the risk of premature birth with omega-3 fatty acids, which is certainly a risk factor for the child's health. And then it's, and DHA enhances the brain function of the child, and so on and so on. So it's desirable to take fish oil, but if it's rancid, disaster can ensue. Tell us about that study in rats.
So, you know, there was a lot of information about that. Basically, you know, there's some upsides and some downsides. They did use incredibly large amounts of fish oil. I will say that. They used huge amounts of fish oil, probably what we would consider a 40 soft gel, essentially, of an average an average soft gel fish oil. But the other thing they did is it also had levels of rancidity that were not necessarily representative of what could actually happen in a product on a retail shelf either. Right. They were literally running oxygen through the product with light presence and all of that.
However, the usual consumer, even the least savvy consumer, would probably taste a product like that and say, yuck. But frankly,
think anyone would go near it. I can't imagine how bad it must have been.
Right. But I have to say that consumers are not that discriminating in some ways, and especially if it's in a capsule, they don't know what they're swallowing. And if it's like, you know, $14.99 for, you know, 300 capsules, and it's, you know, at one of the discount outlets, that's a pretty appealing option.
It can be, unless you understand why it's important not to do that. And you're right. If it's in a soft gel, most people are not going to be able to tell, with one exception, and that is what we lovingly in this industry call the fish burp.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is that when you use a fish oil, because I was one of these people, I thought I was just one of those people that taking fish oil gave me these fish burps.
Right.
Well, it turns out that taking a low-quality oxidized fish oil, think about it this way. If you go to a restaurant and someone sets a plate of salmon down in front of you and immediately you are smacked in the face with the smell of fish, you know that that salmon was not fresh.
Yeah.
And fish oil is exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So smell and taste is the number one way, no matter how much you know about fish oil or don't, smelling it and tasting it will tell you almost everything you need to know about that oil. And it really does make a difference.
Okay. So, which brings the question is, you know, so who regulates this? How can you assure as a consumer that you are getting a high quality fish oil? Is it just if you pay a lot of money, it's, you know, that's how you know?
I mean, you know, as you just proved with the prescription, not necessarily. Although I will say that fish oil is one of those categories that going cheaper is never the solution with a fish oil, with probiotics, with enzymes, anything that's very volatile or easy to mess up in manufacturing. So certainly price does make a difference, but there's really the best way to know about the fish oil that you're taking is to know about the company and their manufacturing processes. So what I suggest to everyone is ask, call the company and say, what information can I get from your company about your manufacturing processes? And if the company will not offer you a certificate of analysis on their systems and on their products, walk away from the product. Mm-hmm. If they will offer it to you, make sure that that certificate is showing you about the potency, so the amount of EPA and DHA that they claim is in there, the purity, that it's fresh and clean and pure, does not have things like heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, that they've removed that, and then also that you have these very, very low oxidation levels. Now, there are international standards for levels of oxidation that are allowable in a fish oil. And for instance, if you get a Nordic Natural certificate of analysis, which anyone can do on any product, you call the 800 number on the back, you give them the lot number.
And it's by lot number, so it's not just like, okay, we're going to show you that all our products are great. It's like you say, this bottle is, I'll read you the lot number, you know, I got it at this health food store, and, you know, it's been tested. You can actually isolate by product, by lot number, each is certified.
Yes. It is, and it makes a big difference. And then when you look at our oxidation levels, we are consistently well below those international allowable standards, and we measure our oxidation in three different ways. As a matter of fact, we test our product at every single stage of manufacturing, so by the time it lands in a consumer's hand, it has been tested no less than 80 times.
What is IFOS?
The IFOS, say that, say
it,
that again,
I can hear that. What is IFOS? International Federation of...
Oh, yes.
Something? Oh, International Fish Oil Standard. International Fish Oil Standard.
Yes, so it's... Yes, I'm sorry. So they set standards for things like the oxidation levels, correct? So they're the ones that kind of go in and give us these guidelines that fish oil companies hopefully are going to follow, and they are meant to ensure that the product that is making it onto the shelf is going to be fresh and clean and pure and safe. Because again, as you mentioned with the study on oxidation, we do understand and are understanding more and more every day that it matters how you manufacture a fish oil, especially if people are going to be taking higher amounts, which is getting more and more common.
Does IFOS test all the fish oil brands out there, spot test, like a random testing, or is it just by voluntary testing companies subscribe to IFOS to show the public that their products are wholesome and fresh?
Well, in this day and age, you're sort of always subject. You know, people are often picking products off the shelf and testing them in order to see, make comparisons. So you're always subject to it.
Yeah.
But it is something. It is something.
ConsumerLab.com could do that or something.
For example. But companies that are choosing to participate in that program are doing so because not only do they want to support the importance of a high quality fish oil, but they're also doing it because they're not afraid to do it.
Did you want to say something about the importance of the microbial ecosystem? That's, I think, an area of foundational.
I do. I'll keep it brief. I know we're getting low on time, but but it's another piece of that puzzle for foundational nutrition. It's a big part of keeping things like our digestive system in optimal working order. As a matter of fact, our entire body, inside and out, we have these microbes all over us. You know, and I think in 2014, they sort of adjusted the numbers, but they were saying that 3 to 1, that we were 3 to 1 as far as microbial cells in and on our body and human cells that we were made of. And so it is a really important part, and just one of the little keys that I found really fascinating is how it interacts with the immune system. So what you have is your immune system will help to regulate the type of microbes that are growing in and on our body. And then those microbes in turn are providing crucial information for the proper function of that immune system. So it's just this really beautiful synergy where when we can keep them both, the more we invest in keeping both healthy, it's just this cycle that keeps going. They keep each other healthier and healthier and healthier. So again, it's part of that tending that foundational nutrition, and those microbes are a huge part of that.
So, Geralyn, what is today's Intelligent Medicine Call to Action? I understand that there's a special promotional program that's via Nordic Naturals. Buy a bottle, help us build a playground. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, absolutely. So essentially what that is we're always working within the community in order to try to make a difference. And one of the big differences for this one is for kids, because we know that outside playtime makes a big difference in their health. There's a lot of health benefits for them, but a lot of kids aren't getting that time to play outside. And sometimes it's because they don't have the facilities. So what we've done is we have partnered up with Carter's Kids. They're a nonprofit organization that builds parks and playgrounds.
Does it have to do with Jimmy Carter, the Carter Foundation, or something else?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it is associated. I don't know that it is associated with that, but I do know that what they're dedicated to is building parks and playgrounds for children. So essentially, if you buy a Nordic Natural children's product in July, August, or September, we're going to take the total sales at the end, and we're going to donate up to $75,000 to the program in order to get a playground built. We're also going to be sending some volunteers as well to help get that done.
Great. And so if people want to learn more about Nordic Naturals, by the way, Nordic Naturals, we stock their products at the Hoffman Center. I recommend their products to my patients. It's a great company. It's, it's a big company, but it's still one of those closely held companies. It's not a big conglomerate. It's family owned. And they really have made a commitment to quality because reputation's important in this business, and you can take the short path to success and cut corners, or you can take sort of a more ethical long-term path towards really positioning yourself as a company of excellence within a field that sometimes is rife with less optimal products.
Yes, I agree completely.
And a commitment to education and research, which you're part of.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference, because you mentioned earlier the military. That's some of the research that's happening now. And one of the reasons that we are so committed to research is because we know the difference that omega-3s make in people's lives and their ability to live these happy and healthy and productive lives. And so doing the research allows us to speak about it in a very clear way. And that's one of the big reasons we're so committed to research, is to really be able to get that information out there.
And apropos of that, I really hate the idea that a couple of Congress people, Dick Durbin, one of them, they want to ban the sale of nutritional supplements at military PXs. And I think that's a terrible idea. I guess they're concerned about the abuse of these sports enhancing nutrients. So these flaky products that are designed to, stimulate you, full of caffeine and stimulants. This would deny soldiers whose diets, frankly, are kind of meager and rudimentary, an opportunity to supplement their intake, with valuable supplements and also subsidized by the military, because I think they're probably going to be sold pretty close to cost. So I think it's a terrible idea.
I do too. I agree with you on that completely.
Okay. So if you got a military person in your family, send a soldier a bottle of fish oil, build a playground, and give us some websites where you can find out more about this.
Yeah, so there's some really great resources for everyone. If you're looking for research, omega-research.com if you go there to that site, it's a compilation of all of the omega-3 research. It has a search bar. You can put in a search word, anything that you would like information on, and it will literally pull up the omega-3 research that is related to that or has that search word in it. So that's a great resource. And then another one of my personal favorites is EFAeducation.org. And if you go there, they have the ability, they have a resource for you to go and plug in foods. You can search a food. It's done individually, so you have to do it one at a time, and you have to put in a single food. You can't search an enchilada or a cheeseburger. You've got to put in individual foods. But it will give you the fatty acid breakdown for those foods. So if you're a little bit of a control freak like me, you can get that jumping off point from what your diet looks like and where you might need to start with getting more omega-3s into your diet.
Well, that's great stuff. EFAresearch.com or org?
EFAeducation.org is the one to be able to research the food. And then omega-research.com is where you can find the resource for all of the omega-3 research.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Geralyn. Excuse us for going a little over time, but the discussion's fascinating, and there's a lot to cover. I look forward to a reprieve with you on subjects related to foundational nutrition. Thanks for covering
thank
this issue
so
for
much.
Us. I'm
thank
Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.